How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. One in five people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
5, 6, 7, 8, back to school.
We're going back to school.
Back to school.
Back to school.
With a backpack.
All right.
Here we go.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Gilmore to Say with Tara and Haley. I'm Tara. This is Haley. Hi, Haley.
Hi, Tara.
We're going back to school for the third time. Yes. I was thinking about this today, and we're starting to approach the season where it's like, oh, for our last X episode and the one before that, we did this. Like, I feel like fall is when we really started to lean in on this podcast to like themed episodes.
Yeah.
We did like a lot of topical episodes leading up to that. But then, of course, in 2022, knowing that fall was like, this is our first fall, and we kind of really leaned into, more of the themed episodes. We're kind of coming up now on like the third year of doing this.
On our third fall, that's what we were talking about. I don't remember, maybe it was on pod recently, where like the first fall, we were like, okay, let's just lean into this. And we were like, oh, that went well. Second fall, we're like, let's lean into it again and see what it does. And we're like, oh, that went well. And now we're like, oh.
Here we go
again. Okay.
Mama
All
Mia.
The girlies show up in the fall here, which they really makes do. So much sense. Because totally. This is our first episode in what we would consider Gilmore Girls season.
Well, here's the thing. So the reason that I was like kind of marveling at the fact that it's like, oh, we've got to go back and listen to our last back to school episode. And then, oh, the one before that. It's like, wow, we've been doing this for a long time. We actually have changed our minds about this.
Twice. Several times. This is our third time.
This is our third time changing our minds about this. So in 2022, the back to school episode, the first back to school episode we did was the girlies' first day at school. Or first day of school. Not sure which one. But
yeah, one of those.
In that we said like beginning of September, it is Gilmore Girl season. And then
we were
last
so adamant.
Year for the academic things apply, you were like, I know I said this last year, but this year we're actually hoping to hold on to summer a little bit longer. So Gilmore Girl season is starting with fall. Like,
yeah,
that is
because
when Gilmore
I
Girl
was
season
really
started.
Into summer last year.
You really like, were. You were loving summer.
I loved summer. Summer was healing me. And I was like, I'm not ready to go back to the dark times. But this time.
This year you changed your mind again.
I'm over it. I'm ready. I went shopping for all of my like fall decor. Like I'm ready. I went back to school shopping. You see all my pencils here.
Yeah.
You never know when you'll need a pencil.
It's true.
I got many. None of them are sharpened, but don't look.
Well, the thing is that we've also talked about this. I feel like in Georgia and California and other parts of the country, back to school season really is at the end of summer. It's like August.
Yeah.
And
everyone's
so,
already back to school. I told you when I went to Target for like back to school stuff because I wanted to like get, you know, I'm not going back to school, but I like to shop for back to school things. Mm-hmm. It was already gone. Everything was wiped out. They were like replacing it with Halloween.
Whereas here in the Northeast, it's like back to school season is really it's here. Right. But it's not it's definitely not over. Most people don't go back to school until like Labor Day for us, at least for like elementary school and alike.
Yeah.
College, yes. Like people are already last week of August going back to college, but it's just so funny that in other parts of the country, that is not the case. They're starting school at like the beginning of August.
When it's still like summer. Like,
summertime. Which technically, you know, it's still summertime now, right? But September doesn't feel like summer. September feels like fall, right? Are we going to change our minds about this next year?
Maybe. It really just depends how summer goes. I'm just over it. But the thing was, is like,
it's
was like.
Hot.
It's been like 95 like degrees here and it dropped down to 85 and it had a breeze. And my mom and I were like, it's fall.
Well,
it's
let me tell you, yesterday morning, it was in the high 50s here in New York City.
Oh, my God.
I got a warm matcha. I know. No, I posted a picture to my story and I was like, a taste of things to come, because it genuinely felt like fall. My friend Caroline with Pretty Little Podcast, they do like a Pretty Little Liars rewatch podcast. I'm sure people have heard me talk about it. That is also, I feel, a very fall show, like very spooky show.
Different fall vibes.
We were voice messaging and she was like, I'm sitting on my porch. I am drinking a coffee. It is our season, Tara. There's a chill in the air.
There's a chill in the air up my spine. The girlies are, we've summoned them.
Yes, we have. No, cast the spell. But by the time this airs, we're recording this a couple weeks in advance, it is definitely going to get warmer again, but we've just had some really nice breezy mornings. I took a walk today in Central Park and it was so nice. It's that air, that crisp air.
It's getting crisp. That crisp air is coming.
This is one of my favorite times of year. Like I talked about this last year. August, September, October is like the perfect trio for me because I love the end of summer. I love the cooler mornings and the warmer afternoons. I love when it gets like that in like the high 50s, low 60s in the morning and in the evening where I can just like smell it coming, but it's still warm in the afternoon. I'm not freezing. No, there's just something so delightful about that.
It's cozy time. It's those burr months, September, October, November, December. Burr. Like this is when we thrive. And I mean, it's in Georgia, it doesn't get as cold in the burr months as it does in the airy months, January, February.
The Aries.
But yeah, it's that cozy time of year. Everyone's probably starting their Gilmore Girls rewatch now. If you're not rewatching all year long, I don't know. I feel like even if you're rewatching all year long, it's that time of like, oh, let's go back to the beginning. Let's summon the girlies. Let's summon fall.
Yeah, let's summon Hillary Duff.
Beginning. Exactly. But that starts with back to school, I feel like. Back to school really is like that. It's time to go back to fall. Summer's over. Summer break is over.
Yeah.
Here we are. And even as girlies who do not attend school anymore, I feel like that never goes away. I think it's because we're in school for so long because both of us went to college. Mm-hmm. So from like the time we're in kindergarten until our senior year of college, like – that's so much time of our life that was spent like with the new beginnings feeling in September, like that crisp air, getting new school supplies, getting a new first day of school outfit.
All the outfits.
That just feels so ingrained in us.
Yeah.
Especially because our favorite show is Gilmore Girls. If y'all didn't know that, that is our favorite show.
It is. And because academia is such a through line, and we talked about that in last year's episode in the Academic Things Apply, that like academia is so present throughout the entire series of the show, which I think also adds to it feeling like fall.
Yeah, year-round. It's just like a major theme. It's like that academia books that you want to start reading, like set in college, like that. Just at that, if school feels like fall, and it's such a through line through the show. So naturally, this is the school show.
this is the school show and the school episode, but. 2 years ago, we talked about the back to school episodes. We kind of discussed them and which ones were our faves. I'm actually really curious. I listened to both the Girlies First Day of School and the Academic Things Apply yesterday. And I kind of want to share with you some of the things that we said. And I wonder if they're still true.
Because
we've been revisiting a lot of things, you know, as we just rebranded and everything about our feelings on it before we really get into today's topic. Well, first of all, we said that Gilmore Girls season starts with back to school season. And then last year we said that it starts with actually the first day of fall. But this year we're changing our minds again, right?
Yeah.
That's
September
the
1st.
General consensus. but you also said the fall is a state of mind. And so I think that gives us the opportunity to change our mind it gives us the opportunity to be in fall year round if we want to with the Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Because of the academic aspect to the show, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of what we talked about when we talked with the New York Times. We contributed to that article earlier this year, is that Gilmore Girls is in the same vein as like Christmas movies. Mm. Like helps you get into that mindset because that it just so thematically fits that like you can kind of enter that mindset kind of whenever you want to.
Yeah, it's true. So as far as our favorite back to school episodes, like first day of school episodes, do you remember what you said your favorite was?
Probably the Lorelai's first day at Yale.
We both said the Lorelai's first day at Yale. I mean, it's hard to beat that episode. But because we were both in agreement that was our favorite episode, we picked a second one. And do you know what your second one was? Do you remember?
Nick and Nora?
No, actually.
The Lorelai's first day at Chilton?
No, it was The Perfect Dress.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is a good one. Six.
Yeah, you said that you loved that it was kind of this resurgence in Rory's life and her kind of revisiting after everything that happens in The Undergraduate and kind of seeing where she lands that. There, which I think is really cool.
I did. She was right.
That girl was right.
Yeah.
Do you know what my answer was? What do you think my answer would have been?
Nick and Nora?
Yeah, same. Hello.
When you said that, I was like, I can't remember if like we landed on the same spot or not for the second answer.
2022 Tara picked Written in the Stars. I know.
What?
I'm not going to lie to you. I think 2024 Tara would pick Nick and Nora, Sid, Nancy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I know. I was so surprised by her.
Okay.
And this was before I cut my hair, so it's not like I can say when I cut my hair, I cut my brain.
I cut your brain. She cut her hair and it allowed more brain, honestly. Yeah. But thinking back now to our most recent rewatch, it's not Back to School, but it is definitely school heavy. Would you maybe say that your favorite school-related episode is Norman Mailer and Pregnant?
Ooh, great episode. I don't know. That's actually a really tough one. Because the thing is that in our first Back to School episode, we only talked about the first day of school episodes. And in kind of trying to figure out how we that wanted to navigate this back episode, sure. But school is such a huge part of this podcast. Sure. School is such a big part of this show that I was like, oh, do we just talk about like all of the school happenings there and our favorite school episodes, like school-centered episodes? And that's actually not what we're talking about today. But I was thinking about it and I was like, I don't even know where I would start with that because so much happens at school.
There's so much to choose from. Yeah.
The answer is I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that next year.
We'll maybe revisit our conversation about Norman Mailer in a couple of weeks when we do our season 5 recap because we're almost done.
We are almost done.
Episode was a slay for us.
It really was. But oh my God.
I guess it's in 2 weeks from this episode. We will be doing that one, which will be so fun because we're loving 5. Because last year we did more of in our back to school, the academic things apply more of like thematically of how academia plays a role in the show.
And I don't want to toot our own horns, but I will. That was a fucking great episode. I was listening to that episode.
I loved that episode.
Damn. Girls.
That's a good podcast. I have fun here.
Yeah, I like it here. I was really fascinated by the topic. And so I was like, damn, what do we talk about? This year, we covered so much ground last year and the year before.
Yeah.
So,
and the year before, we talked a lot more about how Gilmore Girls school, like the theme of school affected us and like a little bit how our schooling went.
Yeah. You said you were more of a Rory. I was more of a Lorelai. I didn't drop out.
Yeah.
I did not get pregnant. However, just my attitude towards school and being a little bit more like, I know I'm smart, but not that I didn't care. I just was like, I want to be doing other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were very academically driven, similarly to Rory. So we kind of talked about those experiences there. But this year, what we really wanted to talk about was the Chilton era versus the Yale era. Those are two very poignant topics in the Gilmore Girls fandom, especially when it comes to Rory. But there's so much more to unpack besides just Rory when it comes to Chilton versus Yale because it is such an important setting for a lot of the drama, storylines, character development that happens on this show. So we wanted to kind of compare, contrast, connect, parallel. There's a lot of ways in which it's similar and different. Get that detective
magnifying glass out.
I said that to you yesterday. I was like, I feel like it's very this.
I know.
It was the emoji of us holding up our magnifying glasses.
The Gilmore Girly Girl on TikTok, she still has the magnifying glass because that's what she did best was little parallels.
Well, that's why I thought that this would be a really great episode to talk about today because I feel like the Chilton versus Yale of it all. We've talked about it in regards to Rory, and we'll get into a little bit of that today, but we haven't talked about it outside of that. And so I'm really excited to break this down with you.
Yeah, especially because Chilton and Yale kind of feel like if we're going to put an act break in the middle of the series, like it's a lot of people, they end after the Chilton era and kind of skip the Yale era. But I think that you're doing yourself a disservice to the story as a whole because there are so many parallels between them purposefully, like the way that it's set up and the people she meets and the circumstances that they all have. And there's a lot of things that contrasts between the two of them. Yeah. But there's just a lot of like pinpoints and pillars between the two that really feel like they're aligned and connected.
Yeah. And there are some things that are really obvious
Yes.
And some things that are not so obvious.
Yeah. Some things like, are we reaching for this? Maybe, mm-hmm. but we feel like it's similar.
Yeah. And we're going to kind of present those to each other today. Yeah. And we're curious and if you guys have anything to, and you, yes, you, the listener, if you have anything to say about it, of course, call in, because eventually we're going to do a Gilmore to Consider on this.
Yeah.
We have a lot of episodes planned for the next couple months or so.
Fall is stacked.
Literally.
Like, we have been so excited for all these episodes. We've got content coming.
But at some point, we do want to revisit this because we're curious about your opinions on some of the things that we're going to present as parallels, or maybe not so parallel. But I want to start with Friday Night Dinner and the setup of your presences requested slash required.
Demanded.
Demanded.
Necessary. Needed.
Because these two eras are set up very similarly in the pilot and then at the end of season three in Those Are Strings Pinocchio, in that the requirement for Emily and Richard to pay for schooling Chilton versus Yale comes in the form of a weekly dinner. And yeah. I love the parallel between Lorelai going to them for money and then Rory going to them for money. They are very different, but they're meant to parallel each other and kind of be a bit of a full circle moment.
Yeah. I love the juxtaposition of like the agonizing of it that Lorelai is going there like because she has like really no other option to do this. And so the rules here are that we'll pay and you come to Friday night dinner.
Yeah.
And we keep that set up when we go to Those Are Strings Pinocchio at the end of season three, because Rory recognizes that the only way her mom can achieve her dreams is for her to go to her grandparents. Because in the beginning, Lorelai realized the only way for Rory to achieve her dreams was to go to her parents. And so she goes to them. Rory goes to them in three and says, this is my thing. And it feels like for the first time, she's kind of stepping out on her own and doing her own thing and taking care of herself. Mm. I mean, she's getting her grandparents to pay for it, but she's the one setting up the contract. She's the one who is seeking this out on behalf of her mom's dreams now.
Yeah, which is so cool. I love. It's a full circle moment and a parallel because it opens up both of these women, sometimes simultaneously, but also in different ways, to be susceptible to the manipulation of the Gilmores.
Oh, 100%. That's why we love it. Because like if Friday Night Dinner had gone away, we can't have that.
Yeah.
We need the drama.
But it's also fascinating because through the Chilton era, Rory definitely has some moments where she's a little bristly, specifically with her grandmother, but definitely also with Richard.
Yeah.
But during the Yale era, I feel like Rory's relationship with her grandparents really takes a turn, as we see at the end of, well, I was going to say at the end of season five, but that's when it's kind of ushered in. It's ushered into the audience's perspective of what she's about to embark on in being a college dropout living with her grandparents.
Yeah.
But it really takes a left in the middle of season six. And I don't think had she gone to them under the circumstances that she did at the end of season three, but then again at the end of season five, I don't know that we would have gotten that. I don't know what their relationship would have looked like if we hadn't set up Friday Night Dinner again.
Yeah, I don't know that it would have been distance, but I think she still would have seen them. But it's essential to Rory in her relationship to her grandparents, but also essential to the plot as a device to get everyone back together. Because like eventually Chris is the one who's paying for Yale and they go back to Friday night dinner seemingly just because they want to.
Totally. Totally.
And I like that we get to that point that it's I don't think they ever forgive them for Chris paying for Yale, but they eventually come back around and they do it because they want to.
That's fun. I guess. Yeah.
I guess there's really no reasoning for Friday night dinner anymore.
No, but I do think that it eventually leads them to, we're doing this because we want to, not because we're obligated to. We don't need anything from you anymore to warrant you holding this over our heads to require our presence every week, you know?
Yeah.
So that I feel is like one of the more obvious parallels. I think that they set that up intentionally so that it became a full circle moment for Rory. It was a parallel between these two women having to do things for the other to give them accessibility to something that's their dream. For Rory Chilton, for Lorelai, it's the Dragonfly Inn. And so I think that that was a pretty obvious one.
Yeah, definitely.
But as we move through Rory's Chilton era and Rory's Yale era, one of the things that I think you can draw a lot of parallels between the two. I mean, there are moments like in The Deer Hunters where like she gets her paper back and it's a D, and she's kind of like panicking. What do I do? Did I make the right decision? By the end, you know, she lands on this moment of like, yes, I can do it. I'll catch up.
Yeah.
But we kind of see her stumble again in season four. I always draw parallels between seasons one and season four because I feel like it's Rory kind of in this incline in her schooling, yeah, where she's like trying to figure out how to best navigate this new era of her life. Of course, in season one, it's Chilton, and in season four, it's Yale. And she's kind of finding her footing, but she kind of stumbles again in The Incredible Singing Lorelei because she's figured it out, right? She's at a new school, but not in the same way that she was with Chilton, where she's trying to catch up to all these kids around her. But yeah, she is trying to almost catch up to where her grandfather was because he took a specific class load.
The precedence that he set.
Yeah. And that bar is higher for her than I think she initially thought that it was. And she can't live up to that standard. And so she falls apart. And then that kind of leads us to a house is not a home when someone basically, well, really Blaine Booz and Melville, someone tells her like, you don't have what it takes. And she ends up really falling flat on her face. So what's interesting about Rory's journeys through Chilton and Yale is that you kind of don't know what she's working towards after a while.
That's what I was bringing up with you. It's just like, it feels so obvious as to what her is driving her through the Chilton era versus what is driving her through the Yale era feels kind of like a question mark.
Yeah.
Because the Chilton era rather is college. It's Harvard, but like it's college. It's getting into the Ivy League. It's eventually becomes Yale, but it's making her work harder because in The Deer Hunters, when she gets that D, she commits and she starts working harder. She eventually becomes valedictorian. Whether or not that actually tracks.
Oh my goodness. We put a question box up, you know, to see what people wanted to hear us talk about for this back to school episode. And a lot of people wanted kind of a bit of a commentary on like how Rory became valedictorian. And I think we talked about that.
Yeah. And Brad Langford, who like left school for quite some time.
Oh, well, you know what's so funny is that I don't remember if it was in the back to school episode in 2022 or Academic Things last year. We were like, I think it's implied that Paris is the salutatorian, and I was like, no, Brad Langford,
because there's that deleted scene.
Yeah, I guess we didn't know that at the time.
Yeah,
Val and Sal. but what we landed on was that it's because Rory's the main character.
That's main character syndrome, 100%. That's why she ended up there. But like, we were like, does that track? But it's where she was aiming for. She gets valedictorian. She gets into college. All of everything that she was working for makes sense. And then on the flip side, when she goes to Yale, it seems to be a journalist. Like, she wants to graduate and that is her whole goal. But it is not as cut and dry as Chilton, which of course makes sense because getting into college is pretty cut and dry. Like, you have set steps that you have to take. Mm. But it seems like she is not as driven. And I don't know if it's because the writers like kind of like rested on the fact that they had already built up this very academic environment that they, as they focus less and less on school and more on her relationships, that we recognize it as an academic school. She's at Yale, even if she's in her dorm, that we don't need to see class as much and like her working.
But and we also talked about the fact that the setting for her at Yale, really, if it's not the dorms, it's the newspaper. So yeah, I think we're meant to feel like that's the goal she's working towards, that's where the conflict arises, you know?
Yeah.
In season five, when Doyle is like, hey, this is like what you're writing, not working for you.
Yeah.
This is kind of boring. And she's like, all right, how am I going to kind of pivot? And even in Die Jerk in season four, when she writes about, before she writes about the ballerina, it's like, yeah, you can't really write pieces about paving the school parking lot anymore. Like, that's not going to cut it. We're not going to pat you on the back for that. She's being challenged, but it's really in season four, it's them straddling the Yale Dilly News and her classes. By the time we get to season five, I feel like it's no longer about the classes anymore. It's really zeroed in on the Yale Dilly News and where she's thriving and where she's maybe not thriving there.
Yeah. And I think that I don't know if that's a reflection on the character or if it's just the writers and what they focused on, but it really does seem to just kind of peter out that, like, she kind of loses focus a little bit, which naturally she does in six. That's the whole point. But
it happens in college. That's kind of natural. Yeah,
it's really reflective of it.
Yeah. You're very inundated with the social aspect of it and having to balance that with the academics of it. And I think that I do think the writers presented that really well in the way that they tell Rory's really story, realistic. That, like, she now really has a social life that exists outside of the small town she grew up in, because when she was going through everything at Chilton, she didn't have that social life, so to speak. Like, we have characters, which we'll get into in a few minutes, that, you know, orbit her at Chilton, but she really builds a life for herself, and that's college. At college. Yeah,
100%. And it also makes a lot of sense, which we definitely want to have a GTC about it in general, because when we were talking about it, we were like, oh, we need to know what everyone else thinks about it, which is that the trajectory of her Chilton being so driven and having, like, a very set goal really makes sense that a gifted kid would kind of burn out in their burnout, potentially in their college years and beyond. So her trajectory really makes sense for, like, a lot of gifted burnt out kids.
But
I feel like that is, like, such a huge topic to, like, dive into, that, like, I definitely want to have a GTC on. I definitely want to hear everyone's opinions on that.
Yeah,
and
totally,
maybe what the driving force behind the Yale years really became for her.
Yeah, I know a lot of you besties are romance readers like me, and let me ask you, is there anything better than when the next book in a series you love is finally released? For me, that is The Davenports More Than This by Crystal Marquis. This is the much anticipated sequel of The Davenports, which was an instant New York Times bestseller. I loved The Davenports. It was giving Will They or Won't They Bridgerton vibes, so of course opulent historical drama with leading ladies and their dashing suitors, grand balls, and drama. You know I love the drama. All set in 1910 Chicago with a wealthy Black family, the Davenports. And I love that the author's inspiration for the Davenports was a real family, the daughters of C.R. Patterson, who was a carriage manufacturer in the early 1900s. And I can confirm The Davenports More Than This continues the story you fell in love with, or will fall in love with if you haven't started yet, as we pick back up with Ruby, Olivia, Amy Rose, and Helen as they navigate a rapidly changing society and discover the courage to steer their own paths in life and, of course, in love. As the drama heats up in the summer of 1910, you'll find these young Black women meeting new faces and facing new trials that change their lives and hearts in ways they couldn't have imagined. If you've read The Davenports, you know you want to pick this up immediately, and if you have not yet read this series, this is the perfect time of year to settle into a story that you won't want to leave. You can buy your copies at The Davenports by Crystal Marquis and its sequel, The Davenports More Than This, wherever books are sold.
Haley, do you like free stuff?
I do like free stuff.
Well, then you're in luck, because Buy Optimizer's Black Friday deal starts now, and they are giving away free gifts with every purchase.
We have an exclusive advance invite to Buy Optimizer's Black Friday deal for the entire month of November. This is their best sale of the entire year.
If you're feeling stressed out or haven't been sleeping well lately, you are not alone.
You are not. You might not be able to change all the chaos out there, but you can start supplementing with one key nutrient to improve your sleep quality, as well as over 600 other biochemical reactions in your body.
Magnesium Breakthrough is the only product I've found that has all the magnesium forms in one convenient bottle. You'll open less bottles, spend less money, and still get the top 7 forms of magnesium for better sleep, managing stress, balancing hormones, improving your mood, feeling refreshed, all in one bottle.
When you get all 7 critical forms of magnesium, pretty much every function in your body gets upgraded.
Right now, for the entire month of November, Buy Optimizers, the makers of Magnesium Breakthrough, are having a Black Friday blowout sale on all of their products.
All month long, you will get discounts with our unique code, plus access to up to $100 in free gifts with purchase.
This is the best time to stock up and take advantage of all the free extras you're going to get. You can only get this exclusive deal through our link for our Gilmore to Say audience only. You won't find this on Amazon or even on the company website. So go to buyoptimizers.com/moretosay and use code moretosay to get your discount and free gifts today.
And one last thing, you should know all Buy Optimizer supplements are best in class. If for some reason you feel differently, you can get a full refund up to 1 year after your purchase, no questions asked.
Again, the link to go to right now for this exclusive deal is buyoptimizers.com/moretosay.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
And the thing is that with Chilton and Yale, comparing Chilton Rory and Yale Rory up against each other does feel like kind of the call and response in the same way that it does for the other person that really anchors the academic story in this entire series, which is Paris. Like comparing their counterparts, or really just comparing them to different versions of themselves. So we've got Chilton Rory versus Yale Rory, but then we've got Chilton Paris against Yale Paris, which are two very different women.
Yeah. And even speaking of like driving forward, like I feel like at Chilton, once Rory shows up for Paris on Paris's end, that's her purpose. It's like defeating Rory almost.
Totally.
And even at Yale, like it really is that driving force for her, because when Rory decides to drop out of school and Paris goes to Lorelai and she's like, she's not going to do this. I need her. She's the only one that doesn't walk out of the room before I'm finished talking.
Yeah.
And she really becomes this person for her. Even if it's not like, even if Paris goes on and achieves her dreams, Rory was always kind of that like competition that she needed in her life. She
was her constant. Do you feel that she still felt that way at Yale?
I don't know if it became competition as much as maybe accountability. Maybe she was really the only friend that she had.
I think that Rory is an anchor for her at Yale.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would necessarily view them as competition at Yale. Their goals are different anymore. Now. You know, talking about Rory's goals, which kind of has a question mark over it when it comes to her time at Yale. Yeah. I feel like Paris's goals are pretty clear, which actually I have a question about, because she's pre-med, right? And by the time you get to pre-med. Season 7, she's kind of torn between whether or not she's going to go to law school or she's going to go to medical school, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why is she at the Yale Daily News?
Because she's multifaceted.
She's definitely multifaceted, but she's like editor of the Yale Daily News. And that feels like it would go to somebody
on the religion beat.
On the religion beat. Now I'm very confused. But you know what I mean? Like, she becomes the editor of the Yale Daily News. Was that a goal of hers? I imagine so. She was at the paper when it was the Franklin, and she was the editor of the Franklin at Chilton. I admittedly, until we really started diving into this and I started really watching the later seasons, didn't realize that Paris and Rory, that their goals had changed. Their majors were different. Because I always thought that they were working towards the same thing, because I thought Paris also wanted to be a journalist. And now upon like really diving into the later seasons, I'm like, wait, no, she's pre-med. Oh, right. She gets into like all these different grad programs at the end of the series that Rory doesn't, you know, get into, but they're also not applying for the same things because they're not in the same major. But why is Paris still working towards journalism?
I don't necessarily think she's working towards journalism. I think it's probably just an extracurricular for her. I think she just, Paris is Paris and can do a million things because that's how her brain works.
Yeah.
I don't know, because if she was doing something else, she wouldn't be with Rory. She was working in like some other club that was related to medicine or law, she wouldn't be with Rory.
Yeah.
But maybe because they look for well-rounded students when you're applying to grad school, regardless of what it is. So maybe that was why. But also, she's the sidekick to the main character. Can't have her going too far.
No, I know. I'm glad that's really the only she's answer there. I have. It just was one of the first times that I was like, recently, I've been thinking about that, because we just watched But I'm a Gilmore, and there's this whole running joke about her being pre-med. And so
You're pre-med.
She won't like take care of Doyle because he's sick. And I'm like, well, yeah, because she's a journalist.
Well, also, I hate when people are like, you don't like sick people, you're pre-med. It's like, okay, I'm in my undergrad. I don't have to address sick people for quite some time. Even when I go to medical school, it is hit or miss whether or not what kind of sick people I'm going to be dealing with.
Yeah, I might be dealing with injured people, not sick people.
I might be doing surgery on people who are never going to – I'm never going to witness a cold.
Fair. But anyway, in talking about Paris's goals, I was just curious what your thoughts were on that, because I had that thought yesterday. As we were recording our Patreon episode, I was like, huh.
You know, I bet you a whole iced matcha latte that there is someone who is listening to this.
Stakes are high.
Who was on their school paper and then either went to law school or med school.
Which, listen, I mean, that that's totally like, fine.
I just know that there's a little Paris out there, and I want you to call in and tell us that you're the Paris.
Yeah, tell us. Let us know.
At least so I can give Tara her matcha latte. Otherwise, she won't get it.
Yeah, otherwise I'll never have a matcha latte again. But let's talk about Paris and her introduction, because I feel like that's also a very obvious parallel. Like,
there's
when we talk
so
about...
many Paris parallels.
Oh my God.
Bing, bing. Paris parallel. What was that?
Love
I don't
that
know,
song.
My friends. I don't know.
Copyright it right now. I love her introduction. I love that the first day of school for Rory, when it comes to the Lorelai's first day of Chilton versus the Lorelai's first day of Yale, which those two episodes in and of themselves are meant to be parallels. First day of school episodes. They're titled the same with a different
Where's
school.
Where's the cowboy
after them.
Boots at Yale?
I know. What gives?
Get them in their Tecovis.
Lorelai's
right now.
Definitely much more put together in the Lorelai's first day at Yale. Not much, but much more.
Yeah.
Not by much. The bar is low.
I guess maybe it's like the parallel of that would be like maybe the scramble of like, wait, we should have brought all this stuff to school. Like in the first one, it's like we should have worn proper clothes to school.
Yeah.
Because we did re-release our Connecticut,
Connecticut Cowgirl today. That's right. Speaking of cowboy boots, our Connecticut Cowgirl is available on www.gilmoretosay.com. Forgot about her.
Yeah, it's our little nod to back to school to bring back our This Ain't My First Rodeo. Because the rodeo's back at school.
Rodeo's back at school. But speaking to Paris in her introduction in those episodes, I love that when we meet Paris in the Lorelai's first day at Chilton, she is so massively unhinged.
Yes.
And when we re-meet her at Yale and she's reintroduced in Rory's life in a very different capacity, she is like, she's got Terrence, her life coach. She's like, give me a hug. Give me a hug. Like, she's checking to make sure that this is okay. She is excited to see Rory. She requested to be with her. This girl that, like, when we met her in the Lorelai's first day of Chilton was, I think, a little excited to see Rory, but, like, wanted to intimidate the shit out of her.
Yeah, I think she wanted to intimidate her. I don't know if excited is the right word, but she was, like, there was someone new in town to kind of, like,
new girl focus, town.
Yeah, focus her energy on. But yeah, I really love the idea of that, like, she was unhinged in Chilton. And then when we see her again at Yale, she's like in this attempt to like become unhinged, if you will, but in a very unhinged way.
I was going to say, it's she's like, still unhinged. She has like
she
her
will
craft
be
corner.
Paris.
Oh my God. Yeah, like at the end of the day, these are still the same exact women. She's gone through so much growth. And we've talked about that in our discussions about her. I think we talked about it in Paris is Thriving, which we did over 2 years ago now at this point. I know. Crazy. But she has really grown. But in so many ways, she's still who she is.
Exactly who she is. She's that person who's like seeking out competition, whatever means she can find it.
Yeah.
And in Chilton, it's Rory. And I think at Yale, it's maybe herself.
Yeah,
because that kind of no man is an island, but this woman is fives and six in season six.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's quite a few parallels if we continue with Paris, but that one I feel like is the most obvious.
Yeah,
but the next one that we have is her breakdown. Speaking of season six,
if you really want to break down her breakdowns in season three, it's over the fact that she doesn't get into Harvard, and she of course famously has that whole spiral and just unraveling on national
C-SPAN.
Television on C-SPAN.
You know, at our live show, there were two girls who were there. I think their names were Hannah and Caitlin, and it was the night before their senior year of high school. They came to see us, and that was my advice for them. I said, don't go on C-SPAN this year.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Anyway, the next time that we see Paris really unravel is in season six. I believe the episode is You've Been Gilmore. No, Friday Night's All Right for Fighting.
Yeah.
She's really lost it. She's built like a hut in the middle of the newsroom. She has like a
with
hidey
a hot
hole.
Plate.
Yeah, with a hot plate, she's going to burn the place to the ground. Yeah. And she's like genuinely lost it. And the thing is that we already had like parallels of Paris. Like, I think the more obvious parallel of Paris and the newspaper is her being the editor of the Franklin and then the editor of the Yale Daily News. And also when she is in a position of power, she's the kind of person that like, remember she has that moment where she like has coffee and donuts for,
and no one gets to eat them.
And I think it happens when she's student body vice president versus when she's the the Yale Daily News.
When she's student body president, yeah.
Yeah, but then also when she's the editor of the Yale Daily News, kind of the same thing happens. Where it's like, we're going to get coffee and donuts, but we're not actually going to drink any of them.
I can't remember. I just remember everyone had little Dixie cups that they had to write their name on to get
right.
The water.
She's like kind of, she's, and everyone she's has still, hats. Who, yes.
A lot of control.
A lot of control.
She won't even learn their names, just numbers.
But I think that what's really fascinating is when she has her breakdown in season three, it's over something, over not getting something that she really fucking wanted, that she worked yeah. so hard to get.
And she feels like she got distracted from her goal. And like, that was the reason, because it was like she got on C-SPAN and it was like, I didn't get into Harvard. I didn't get into Harvard. And it feels like she feels like she deviated from the path. Yeah. And that was why, because totally. She didn't get what she wanted.
But in season six, I feel like her breakdown is because she got what she was working towards.
Yeah.
She lets it take over her entire personality, so much so that like she completely unravels. So I find it really fascinating that her breakdowns in season three and season six are parallel in a sense, but the differences between them are because of her not getting what she worked towards and her getting what she worked towards. No matter what way you slice it, Paris is gonna break down.
And it feels like she almost like in the first one she loses focus, and that's what it was, but yeah. this one she becomes hyper focused.
It's almost like
focused.
It envelops she her can't, like it yeah. just takes over her world.
She can't see focus anything outside else. Of it
yeah
because blinders. Everyone else is like useless and can't contribute to this, and it's really easy to see the parallel there of like maybe the mindset, if this was a real person as opposed to like a character, that we could see that like that was an effect of like, I'm the only one who can control this and make this the best that it could be, because I have in the past not gotten what I wanted and I'm not going to lose it. But she loses it. She literally loses it. Like she loses her mind and has her little hot plate hidey hole, and it's on Rory. Rory has to be the one to step up and get the paper out, because on D-Day, the paper came out.
Yeah.
And she has to save it. And this is a very cute moment where Logan helps her save the paper. But this is also a parallel moment of Rory gets what Paris wanted.
It is.
Paris didn't get to Harvard. Rory did. Paris became the editor of the Yale Daily News and then lost it to Rory, who stays it until... Yeah. the beginning of season seven when she passes it off.
But interestingly, I feel like these two breakdowns that Paris has not only are then followed by Rory getting exactly what she wanted or worked towards, regardless of whether or not Paris had it or didn't, it's bookended by Paris and Rory's friendship taking a hit, because before the big one, we have, of course, I Solemnly Swear, famously one of our least favorite episodes, where
we love Francie.
It's mostly our least favorite conflict, because Francie is kind of
nonsense,
like fucking around with everybody's friendships. And it ends up resulting in the rift between Paris and Rory until the big one, because Rory is the one comforting her. And similarly in season six, Rory is the one comforting her and kind of trying to soften the blow of like, listen, this isn't working. I'm worried about you. I'm concerned also about the state of your hidey hole. It is going to burn down at some point. But I never really thought about this until now, that like the last time that Rory and Paris have like explosive conflict is in I Solemnly Swear, which is resolved then in the big one. And then the next time that their friendship takes a hit and they have a rift is in this moment in season six, right? They don't have conflict in between them. Well, they have conflict, baby conflict, little spats.
Baby, like roommate conflict.
Roommate friend typical conflict. But like in You've Been Gilmore'd, when Rory gets elected as editor of the Yale Daily News, this causes not only a rift, but Rory is literally displaced from her apartment because Paris
moves all
kicks
her
out
in the hallway.
Yeah,
can books look sad? That's what Rory says when she's looking at all her stuff. But yeah, when you were saying that, like, that Rory comforts Paris after this, all I can remember is them sitting on the steps backstage, and she's like, really, you know, supportive of here and supportive of her here and saying a lot of really encouraging things. And then when we flip to six, she is trying to like soften the blow, but she takes her job.
Like, she does.
How else is she going to take that? Yeah. But kick her out. Like, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
No, it does. But I do think that Rory was going to her as like a friend. She was also elected to not only take over the job, but she was elected to be the one to go in and tell Paris that she's been overthrown as editor-in-chief. So there are parallels there. But yeah, also the circumstances are different. But I would say that like that is her breakdown and the breakdown of Paris's character and where we see her really unravel and lose it. It could be paralleled between these two.
Yeah. They're moments. Two really defining moments for her.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing that is kind of a parallel with her, but also coincides with Lorelai here, is that Paris is always involved in some sort of scandal at school.
Of course.
When it
Have
comes
you seen this
to,
girl?
I mean, of course. When it comes to, again, famously another one of the episodes we don't really love, Paris is burning. Where
this was actually, if you listen to our episode of Face Off between the two of us when we were playing the newlywed game, this was Tara's answer.
Yeah.
Of the episode she wanted to delete.
Honestly. There are ways in which that episode gives me like cozy vibes. Like when
I was gonna
Lorelai
say it's
sitting, it's total vibes.
It's season
when
one.
Lorelai
vibes.
Is sitting on the counter at Max's and she's eating the food after he's just made her dinner and stuff. And I love the conversation between Suki and Lorelai when she's like, "Live la vida loca." This is when you do the cha-cha, you know. But everything that actually, speaking of school, everything that happens at school is what bothers me.
Yeah.
I don't love the writing. I don't love the execution of it in the acting. Like, there are just, those are the moments that make me feel icky. Everything else around it, I'm like, I'll keep it. Yeah. Right. But when it comes to Paris, first of all, if we want to talk about it from Rory's vantage point, there is the fact that, like, someone important to her, close to her, actually someone she's living with, is dating a professor
her
of hers.
Mother.
In season one, is her mom, and she's dating Max. And it puts Rory in the position to have two very different relationships with these people, right? With Max, it's like, at first it's like, you're dating my mom, but also you're like one of my favorite teachers and you've been really soft with me. And like, you're also one of everybody else's favorite teachers. You're beloved by a lot of people. And then all of a sudden it becomes like, oh, you're going to be my stepdad.
Papa.
And then in season four, it's like, this is someone who, you know, Paris starts having this affair with Asher Fleming. So it's like, they're living together. And Paris, of course, is being so not secretive about it.
No, she wants everyone to know.
She
also wants it to be a secret.
Everybody to know. But now Rory has to navigate how she's going to not only talk to a professor of hers, because I don't think that he's actually teaching a class of hers until...
It's like second semester.
Second semester.
Like. Yeah.
But he is friends with her grandpa.
That is how Paris met him.
But what's interesting about Paris's relationship in all relation to all of this is that Paris is the one to kind of blow everything up in season one between Max and Lorelai and Rory at school. And then
she sees them.
Yeah. But then she goes on to date a professor in season four and blow up a lot of things around her there. Everything with Jamie, of course, but puts Rory in an awkward position. Like, in both of these instances, in very different ways, Paris isn't thinking about how this is going to impact anybody else around her. She's only thinking about herself.
Yeah.
And in the season one instance, it's like, how can I get the spotlight off of me and my parents? And then everybody talking about that.
How can I use this to better help me? How is this going to affect me?
And in season four, it's genuinely like, I just want to be happy and I'm going to do this, even if I'm cheating on my boyfriend, if my roommate is uncomfortable with it. Like, if it's, I don't even know, is it against the rules? Is it frowned upon, as they say in season one about Max dating Lorelai? Like,
it's probably frowned upon at Yale to date a student, but I don't know, like, the policy. If anyone goes to Yale and has dated their teacher, do let us know what that policy is. Mm. Or if you haven't and you know, would love to know the specifics.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I don't know
really...
if I consider them parallels, but I would consider the conflict, like, it's another source
them,
of conflict. Where Rory is put in a position where someone close to her is dating a faculty member that she also has to interact with and doesn't know how to navigate those relationships.
Yeah. It definitely is very easy to compare. I don't know if we would call it a parallel, but like, it's kind of what it is. It's like this parallel moment of Rory in her first year at this new school. Her housemate is dating one of her teachers.
Yeah.
And she's having to navigate that, especially when she's in Asher's class and Paris is kind of like sneaking in at the end, or Asher, one of our favorite lines from season four, which was when Asher comes up and is like, we have someone in common. Your grandfather. We love that line.
I know.
So it's like navigating that as well and thinking that it's affecting her grading, and also with like, she doesn't want that to happen with Max, to have any sort of like favoritism. Mm-hmm. But I think we can consider it close enough.
Yeah.
I had never really thought about it until you brought it up, but I was like, yes. Scandal.
We
love a school scandal.
A little professor scandal.
Not always. This is like very,
very low stakes. Stakes are low.
Yeah. We don't actually like a school scandal, as it turns out.
I'm watching Pretty Little Liars right now. I've talked about this a lot. I think
talk about school scandal.
Talk about school scandal. Like the fact that Arya was dating her teacher. And then, like, they were like, well, we're going to tell people that, like, you know, we started something after I left school. It does not matter. She is literally under the age of 18. None of this is okay. Doesn't matter it's if you're teaching there or not.
Ezra,
all of it is bad. Ezra, what are you doing?
Capital B bad.
And anyway.
Anyway, segueing back to this autumn show.
Yes. From one autumn show to the next. The last parallel that we have with Paris before we start kind of comparing, like, Chilton and their Yale counterparts as characters is in the Secret Society. Like,
yes,
I love puffs. That we're introduced to two different secret societies, which I would argue are kind of parallels in the form of the Puffs in season two and the Life and Death Brigade in season five. And obviously they all kind of surround Rory and her maybe being a part of them, maybe not. But Paris also is kind of orbiting that as well in season two. She's not so much orbiting it in season five, which I find very fascinating because she is so adamant about getting into the Puffs. And I know it has to do with her family and like the generational line that accompanies the pressure of being a part of a society that they've been.
A Puff.
But I just find it interesting that I don't remember Rory and Paris ever having a conversation about the Life and Death Brigade.
I don't think they do. And I think that in part, Paris doesn't have any history at Yale with her family. I think maybe had she gone to Harvard, maybe there would have been some sort of secret society that she would have been a part of that her family was historically in. So I think that makes sense. But yeah, I don't think there's ever a moment where they have a discussion about that beyond her writing the article and us imagining that Paris probably read it. But there's a fine line between the Life and Death Brigade in season five and season six, because like it's a secret, and then now they're like talking about it out in the open.
Well, that happens with the Puffs too.
Yeah.
I feel like it's in season two, it's like, shh, nobody talk about it. And then when they have all this Francie drama in season three, it's like, as you know, I'm the leader of the Puffs, you know, Chilton Secret Society. And I'm like, it's not a secret. You're talking about in the bathroom.
A secret. Shush.
Yeah. No. Like, they're very cloak and dagger about it in seasons two and five. But then by the time we get to season three and six, I feel it's like, nah, everybody knows.
This isn't a secret anymore.
Quality. Yeah. Yeah. And then it's also kind of a giant question mark with the Puffs as to whether or not, like, I'm assuming Paris didn't end up becoming a Puff.
Yeah, that storyline kind of dropped after
Master
Charleston.
Well, I think we also talked about it being a plot hole because, like, in one regard, Paris, like, worships the ground that Francie walks on until season three when all of a sudden she's over her. And it's like, wait,
you wanted to fluff her pom-poms.
You literally wanted to fluff this woman's pom-poms.
Like, literally, that is not euphemism.
not an innuendo. She genuinely wanted to fluff her pom-poms. But the question I wanted to ask you is, why do you think that Rory, like, didn't explore more about the Puffs, especially being a writer for the Franklin, but wanted to do this expose on the Life and Death Brigade when it came to the Yale Daily News? Because she had, like, insider scoop on the Puffs. And maybe she didn't care as much as she did about the Life and Death Brigade. Do you think it was Logan? Do you think it was the driving force of, you know, I'm basically being told that what I'm writing about is boring and I need something exciting. And so this is leading me down this path. What do you think it was?
You know, I think with the Puffs, once that all happened, I think Rory's MO at that time was to like not really ruffle anyone. I don't think Rory was looking to like
She wasn't looking to ruffle.
If she wasn't into a ruffle, I love a ruffle chip, but she was not ruffling the feathers of the puffs, much like Paris wanted to fluff the pom pom. She wasn't ruffling anything. We've said ruffle enough.
it's like, but
I think she wanted to fly under the radar. I don't think she wanted to make any enemies. I think that that was kind of like her MO as she went through Chilton. As we get into season three, I think she. With like the Francie storyline that we don't like, the only reason that she kind of like pushed back was because she was being pushed on really hard. So I don't think there was any impetus or desire for her to want to take what she knew about the puffs and expose it. Mm. I mean, we could have been three when all of that was happening, but Francie seemed to be doing just fine exposing
honestly,
it herself.
That would have been, that's true, but that would have been a really interesting story. Like, I would have much preferred that. Like, Rory's going to do an expose on the puffs, and now yeah. Francie's coming after her.
But yeah, I think that – I think she didn't have as much interest in making waves at Chilton because she had her own life back home.
Yeah. But
there were plenty of waves being caused by Jess and Dean at the time, so
– Yeah, she was trying to establish herself more at Yale, I feel.
Yeah.
That's so true.
And she, like, stood up then and – that meeting or meeting when Headmaster Charleston found them, she was the one to stand up and be like, they kidnapped me. I didn't want to be here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why I'm being punished. So I think after that, she was kind of just like,
I also find it interesting that like in season two, the secret society sought her out. Whereas like in season five, she was the one to initiate that. She yeah. sought them out before they then were like, okay, come on in. You want to see what it's all about? Let's go.
I really think that that was just from the fact that she was writing boring shit and she saw something interesting happen and she had these, I don't know, these inklings that something might come from this, and she dug a little deeper and it turned out there was.
Yeah. Yeah. But speaking of the Life and Death Brigade and also kind of Paris, I feel like two characters that are compared up against each other in like the Chilton versus Yale era are Tristan and Logan.
100%
and I find it fascinating. I think we talked about this in our Patreon episode recently that like Paris was obsessed with Tristan, like so enamored by him, so much so that by the time we get to the revival, she's like, she like runs into the bathroom at the sight of him, opens her empty briefcase.
We were talking about this
apart.
Between the two of us.
Oh, we were.
I don't think this was on Patreon. I think this was you and me.
Oh, but I found it interesting that by the time we got to Yale, she's not impressed by Logan at all. And he is a character that is compared up against Tristan. I see a lot of parallels between the two of them. Like, if we had to put a Tristan counterpart to Yale, it's Logan.
Yeah. And not just because he's blonde and a nice little heartthrob. It really is because they seem to come from the same background. Like, we can so easily imagine, like, Tristan being a Logan type if we, like, dropped him into Chilton, like Logan at Chilton. Tons of fan fiction on that if you guys ever want to explore that route. But it just feels like those so seamlessly fit together a lot of the times, too, because Tristan left. We went off to Dawson's Creek, One Tree Hill. He's at military school. Maybe he's actually still there. Who's to say? We don't know.
We don't know.
Could still be in military school. But it taking him away, it feels like they kind of – a lot of people think that the role that Logan played, Tristan was supposed to play it. There's a lot of like speculation, though nothing has ever been confirmed to that effect. But a lot of people put those two people in the same, stereotype, if you will. They're fulfilling the same trope in Rory's life. Because
well,
we could
like
so easily see Tristan becoming her, her rich
teasing
boy lover.
Rory. Yes. Giving her a nickname.
A little nickname. Yeah. One is nice.
Has like a strained relationship with his dad. Gets kicked out of school a lot. But the reason that like, I think that perhaps that wasn't the intention of Tristan's character to eventually kind of play the role that Logan plays in Rory's life is because I don't think Tristan was being set up to be anything like Christopher. And I know that Amy's intention with these characters was to present kind of parallel personalities in the Gilmore Girls' lives.
At least to the start, at least initially.
Exactly. And I just don't see a world in which Tristan became her Christopher or I don't see a world in which that was the setup that was being presented. Maybe people disagree with me.
No, I don't think so. Because like, if we're looking at it from the comparison of like Lorelai and Chris to Rory and Tristan, I don't think Chris was like picking on her. I don't think we don't have any history of this, but I don't think Chris was like a pull on your pigtail sort of guy. I also don't think Logan was really doing that either.
I was going to ask, like, do you think that Logan and Tristan were similar in high school? I know we're meeting Logan at a different point in his life, right?
Probably.
Maybe. But do you think he would have called Rory Mary? Like, we also have to talk about the differences in nicknames they're giving her.
Mary is like very disparaging, very derogatory. I feel like not good. Ace, aspirational.
You could
believing
be.
In her career. Believing in her dreams.
You could be an ace. Yeah,
you could be an ace reporter. You Whereas are an
Mary
ace reporter.
Is like, as Lorelai says, they think you look like a goody-goody.
Yeah, virginal, like that sort of thing. It's like that's not great. That's not a great look. And I admittedly think that Logan would be more like smooth with the gals. Because like Tristan has a lot of like, he's in demand from the girlies. But I think that the role that they play at school is different enough that had Tristan continued on, like you were talking about earlier, it would have been not a love triangle, but a conflict between Paris and Rory.
Ooh, yeah.
And I like that there's nothing ever, there is like a moment where that kind of happens. But I like that when they become friends, like, and consider themselves best friends and then roommates, etc., there's not ever any really boy drama between them. And I really appreciate that. And you were saying that, like, Tristan, like, was the focal point for Paris in high school. She fawned over him. Mm. She got, like, nervous around him. And I really think that has to do with the history of, like, that was, we speculated, maybe her first kiss because they did kiss. And then she held on to that because, like,
what a dare.
Who can hyperfocus? Oh, that breaks my heart.
That someone kissed her on a dare.
On a dare.
And it was possibly her first kiss.
Probably it was possibly her first kiss with this guy who she hyperfocused on. Loved. And like, then she grew up with him, going to the same schools, etc., running in the same circle, going to all the same forced parties that you're forced to be invited to. But then with Logan, I feel like that could be her not like liking him. Could be the same reason that a lot of people don't like Logan, which is they have someone in their past that reminds them of him. Of like, you, whether or not this character as it's presented on screen is someone that you like, it will never overcome your perception of a person like this.
Yeah.
And so like immediately she probably has the ick for Logan because it reminds her of Tristan. Like, oh, this blonde, the blonde dick at Yale. Like, I'm not falling for this again.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue that, like, a lot of people compare Tristan and Logan, but I would also argue that, like, there are aspects of Jess. Like, if I were to put Tristan and Jess together, maybe it would equal Logan. But I do think that they're, like,
cute,
right?
That's sweet. Love that.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I will say that Riss M. Nielsen, my author episode recently on Gilmore to Read, she used to write Tristan and Rory fan fiction. And I think it's because there's so much potential and unanswered questions there that like it really makes sense. And I think that that is also a lot of the times why you can so easily see like maybe a Jess fitting into that and like rewriting all that together to boop, pop out
well
of Logan.
Because there's a lot of potential and unanswered questions there as well. But yeah, I could see those being the same. But subsequently, when you do find someone who maybe reminds you of someone from your past, you're either apt to take that path because they remind you of someone from your past or completely avoid them.
Yeah. Like it's easy. It's one or the other. Either you're like, ew, ick, no. Mm. Or you're like, oh, this is my
familiarity.
Time. Yeah.
Totally. I'm glad. I agree with you. I think that having boy conflict at Yale between Paris and Rory would have been so tired and very recycled.
Yeah.
We didn't need it.
And I feel like having that like little touch of boy drama at school in high school is just what you need. That is so high school.
Totally.
So high school. Taylor Swift.
I had a feeling.
And then when you get to college, like, it's not that, like, you're outgrown from drama like that, but it's like.
Certainly not.
We're picking our friends differently now.
Very true.
Maybe, supposedly. So, like, I feel like between the two of them, it makes more sense that there's not, that's not happening. They also, like, the taste different. Very different.
Very different.
She likes professors and 20-year-olds who seem like 60-year-olds.
Fair. But speaking of friends, one of the other common parallels that I think are drawn here that I didn't really think about until we talked about it last year,
yeah,
would be Madeline and Louise and Colin and Finn.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to find like the Yale counterparts to Madeline and Louise. And I do think oftentimes people say Lucy and Olivia, but I don't know that that was necessarily their intention.
No, we don't really know the intentions of anything in Seven. So that one's hard.
Fair. I'm more fascinated by Colin and Finn. I think the call and response of Madeline, Louise and Colin and Finn is just brilliant.
And I hadn't thought about it until someone on Patreon mentioned that when we were talking about your least favorite was Colin in the face-off episode that we mentioned earlier, that famously on Patreon, I could never remember Madeline and Louise and like differentiate between the two of them. They can't remember which one's Colin and Finn. And I was like, hilarious. Oh.
Yeah, okay. No, that I know for sure, for sure.
That one is easy. Also, if you do have problems, Finn is an Australian, like Finding Nemo. They're going to Australia. And who has fins? Nemo.
Fish.
Got it. And the other one's Colin. He's the asshole.
He's the asshole. Okay, so if you had to actually pair them up, like this one is more like Madeline, this one is more like Louise, who would you choose? Is it hard because you don't know which one is which?
Tara, I'm going to try really hard.
I have an answer.
It's so hard for me. Like, I cannot tell you why that like can't stick in my mind.
I think because admittedly, like Louise looks like a Madeline. Well, Madeline looks like a Louise.
Okay. Madeline has brown hair.
Yeah.
She looks like she should be named Louise. Like that should be her name.
Yeah.
And the blonde one should be Madeline. Like that's just facts.
I know.
But it is the opposite. And I have to remind myself of that. Louise has blonde hair and there is an L in blonde. That's what someone told me to do once. I think that Madeline, who has brown hair, is more like Finn.
I agree.
Because there's a kindness that
there's a kindness pervades. And a comedic relief to them. Not that Louise isn't funny. And not that Colin can't be funny. Well, so far he's not funny. He's a fucking dick.
Yeah.
But I think that like Louise's intentions with Dean in Rory's dance, where she just like marches up to him and she's like, hey, you know, or I think is what she says. But she's openly flirting with Rory's boyfriend in front of her. She has no, and I don't know that this is necessarily true for her as the series goes on, but she has like no moral compass when it comes to that kind of stuff. And so that to me is Colin. Like, he doesn't care. He'll do whatever he needs to get what he wants. He's very self-involved. And I do find Louise to be the more self-involved one. I see Madeline as the more, like, kind-hearted, a little out-of-touch comedic one.
And, like, when she does do something that's, like, maybe off-kilter, it seems like it's funny. It's for the purpose of a laugh. And I feel like even though Finn is probably for flirting with Rory in front of Logan, it seems like you're like, you know, this is never going to happen. This is just all silly haha. But I think that like the purpose of them is really to like distract from school, really. Because like when we're at Chilton, when Paris like seemingly has these two minions who literally just love boys and lip gloss, still doing excellent at school though. Still like, what is it? Madeline, brown hair. She's making B's. She's doing well. Like, Louise is getting A's. They're still doing well at school, but they're detractors. They're meant to like bring in some sort of social aspect that is distracting them. And I think that's the same for Colin and Finn, because eventually Mitchum sends Logan away so that he doesn't have these distractions anymore. And so it's kind of like these little characters that exist that are distracting you from the main character and Paris being the sidekick. Like their main focus, which is school, I think.
Which is interesting because I never thought of Paris and Logan being like the point in the triangle of that, of those trios.
Yeah.
And comparing the two of them against each other until last year, but really until we started talking about it today, that I was like, oh, right. They're kind of like the leaders.
They're kind of the Regina George.
A little, but like they're just at the forefront of the pack because they're meant to impact Rory's life.
Yeah.
And Paris, of course, makes an impression. And Logan, of course, does as well. So it's very fascinating. I never thought to compare the two of them either.
Because we did have a GTC where we talked about the two of them last year.
And their influence.
I guess we didn't talk about them as like the apex predator of their little triangle.
Yeah, which is just really fascinating to me. And again, like how prominent they are in Rory's schooling in two very different ways.
Very different ways.
But also very, they also are very similar in their upbringing and in their drive towards school and act as kind of, you know, that like to juxtapose up against Rory and her determination and her background. So I find that really cool.
Question, if we imposed Colin and Finn into Chilton and Madeline and Louise come across them, they're these two new kids, and they go on a double date, who's matching up?
I actually think that because of the similarities between Louise and Colin and Madeline and Finn, they would switch.
Like, I think so too.
Colin would date Louise and Finn would date. I'm sorry. Wow. I think that Colin would date Madeline and Louise would date Finn.
Yes. Finn would date blonde hair because I think that Colin and Madeline are a little too similar. And I think that Louise would maybe be a little bit ignorant to Colin being rude.
Mm.
I think she's too open-hearted to.
Are you talking about Madeline?
No, Louise. No, I'm talking about Louise. Louise being with Colin.
I have Louise with Finn and Madeline with Colin.
Madeline has blonde hair.
Yeah. No, Louise has blonde hair.
Louise has blonde hair and she's going to be with Finn.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Okay, that's what I thought.
The girl with brown hair, who is named Madeline,
mm-hmm.
she should be with Colin
yes.
because she has an earnestness to her that would probably disregard Colin's rude comments as yes. something silly.
Yeah.
And could get on board with him. And Louise, who has blonde hair, would be with Finn because I think that she could control him a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
Reel him in.
I agree.
That got confusing because I messed up with my own thing. Louise has an L, which has blonde, but you know what also has an L in it?
Madeline.
Okay.
Sorry, we got there.
Sorry for the confusion, guys. Had to go with the hair color.
We think that Colin and Louise are like counterparts. Madeline and Finn are also counterparts. So therefore, they would basically swap.
Switcheroo.
So Colin and Madeline would be together and Louise and Finn would be together.
That would be a horrible time at school.
I think it would be hilarious.
It'd be hilarious, but like no schooling would happen at Chilton.
That's very,
with the
very
four
rare.
Of them.
Yeah, no, so true. But I think that, like,
that's
Colin
really
and
interesting.
Finn, what?
The idea of like Colin and Finn being at Chilton and Madeline and Louise being at Chilton, and they're like, I was supposed to say they're owners. That's not the right part. They're leaders, being Paris and Logan, like going toe to toe.
Well, what I was going to say is that, like, I feel like it would be, it almost feels like a call and response to Duncan and Bowman. Because, like, that's the thing is that, obviously, like, the rule of threes, we've talked about this.
Of course.
I think that Amy specifically wrote it so that, like, Tristan was kind of the leader of the Duncan and Bowman Tristan trio. And then Logan was kind of the leader of the Logan, Colin, Finn trio.
Yeah.
So you could also draw those comparisons as well. So I guess it would kind of be like if Madeline and Louise dated Duncan and Bowman.
Yeah. Okay.
You know.
See it. Yeah. If that was more like prominently focused.
I was
going to
say, if we even knew who they were, I could not pick those two men out of a crowd.
Then just like walked by one in a scene once.
Yeah. But I also feel like the writers kind of tried to insert like two women at a time into Rory and Paris's orbit at Yale in season four. Like they had Janet and Tana, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they had like, talk about the first day of school. They had those two girls who were like lightly hazing her in the same way that we're like, did you hear that? They are what they are.
Oh,
like, it was
yeah.
really the one girl, but she also had like a
She's
little
so
sidekick.
Mean to her and to Lorelai.
But then at the end, they're kind of like friends.
Yeah. I thought you were talking about the two girls that her grandmother knew who were trying to give her a nickname.
No, but Madeline and Louise show up in that episode, which is interesting.
They do.
So
they also like, show up in Spring Break.
Well, of course, famously. But I think that they tried to give like two women, they tried to put like two people in there to maybe then act as a trio. But I also think it's different now that Rory and Paris are really a duo, because that was not consistent throughout the Chilton era. They would sometimes be friends, but at the end of the day, like, Paris really had her girls.
Yeah. I do like the idea that we went from Paris being a part of a trio and Rory being on the outside at school because she was in a duo outside of school with her mom. Mm. And then when she moves to Yale, they drop the trio and she's in a duo with Paris, which is more familiar to her.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. I think that like there are so many people that probably don't have Chilton or Yale counterparts. Mm-hmm. But like one that I really wanted to kind of suss out was Marty, because I feel like Marty is such a prominent character for Rory throughout season 4 and 5.
Yeah.
Until he isn't. And yeah. I don't really think that she has anybody like that. Speaking of like Rory kind of having a duo with her mom and balancing that in the Chilton years, I don't feel like she has anybody like Marty who understands that not everybody who goes to their school comes from that like Connecticut elite in the same way.
Yeah, there's no other like scholarship kid.
Yeah.
Even at least she's not there on a scholarship.
Like one that she's close to, one that we are getting to know. And I think that the only person that we can really compare him to is Dean.
Yeah.
And it's because big small town boy, right? I don't know where Marty comes from. I don't even know if we ever really figured
out. He comes from his uncle.
Well, he definitely comes from his uncle, but I don't know if we know like his background or where he, like if he came from a small town. We assume these things because he is bartending to get himself through school.
And he hates rich people.
And
so
he's not
it's
really
very
fond
clear
of
that,
of the trio of guys that we meet in Written in the Stars and how they're introduced, that like, it's kind of being insinuated that Marty is part of the working class and these guys are part of the quote unquote upper class. And so I feel like with Dean, the other comparison that can be made is the ways in which they kind of anchor Rory into that reminder that like she comes like kind of like a reminder of home. It like balances her out.
Yeah.
Like a reminder of home when she doesn't really have home, especially in Yale when it comes to Marty, because there are so many people around her that seem to come from like, you know, Logan and Colin and Finn and this
and
world
even Paris.
That she, and even Paris, that she kind of feels a little bit unfamiliar with until it's kind of like shoved in her face that she also comes from that world.
Yeah.
But I think that Dean and Marty, one of the parallels we've drawn between the two of them in the past is in the ways that they kind of bring her back down to earth when she's being naive to Tristan and Logan, who are often compared against each other, teasing her. In Rory's dance, you know, she's like, I don't know what that guy's problem is. And Dean's like, he has a thing for you.
Yeah.
And then in But Not As Cute As Pushkin, when Rory's talking about Logan and how he came into, you know, Professor Bell's class with Colin and Finn and made that
so
whole
annoying.
Sting. So annoying. Like, why does he have an out for me?
Yeah.
And Marty's like, okay, stop being so naive. He likes you.
Yeah.
You're in.
He like, to quote Marty, stop being so naive. It's annoying.
It's annoying. And in
Dean
that
would
way,
never, but
no, I don't think so. Well, I don't know, maybe. But in that regard, I do think that they are very similar in that they're just like, Rory, what the fuck? Like,
yeah,
he likes you. Don't be naive. It's annoying.
Yeah, and
so we can draw parallels there, but I think that's kind of where it ends. You know, that's kind of where it ends. Well, I also think that where it ends is that like as soon as like if you want to kind of draw parallels from like the party's over and Jews and Chinese food. Between the two of them, it's like, I don't belong here anymore kind of vibes.
Ooh,
you like Logan.
Here. Do I? Yeah.
And I think that Marty kind of shuns her when he almost feels like she's choosing Logan and that life over him, which we've talked about a lot recently. Did we talk about that on pod or on Patreon about how we kind of wish that Marty had maybe like the conflict between the two of them had been less about having feelings for Rory?
Well, we talked about it on Patreon. I think we maybe talked about it in a Gilmore to consider on pod. I don't remember. We've touched on it somewhat, but also we talked to Sheila about it at the live show, which you can still watch on Patreon if you join the Vicious Trollops tier. But she gave us a little bit of thoughts and inspiration for Marty himself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But I do think that it would have been really interesting if he just felt like he was losing her to this other life that he didn't understand. And I do kind of think that does exist there, but it is more about his feelings for her.
Yeah, it definitely is.
And with Dean, of course, it is about his feelings for her. But it's also about the fact that he feels like he doesn't fit in here anymore. And Marty so does not fit in at that dinner.
Yeah. Which is what's interesting is like pulling it back to school here is like Dean is so separated from her in that regard. Is like going to this dance is like the first experience that he really has with these kids who he really doesn't have anything in common with. Like seemingly, like I'm sure if they started talking, they're teenage kids. Of course, they have things in common, but he doesn't feel like he does because Rory goes to this prep school that is just full of wealthy people. And we haven't quite connected with a character that is on the same level as Rory. I mean, her grandparents are paying for it, but she did grow up in a small town and has that lifestyle instilled in her. And we haven't connected with anyone else at Chilton. But with Marty, he is at school. He is experiencing the same things as her. And he understands, I guess, Dean's hesitancy and his, I don't know if we ever actually introduced that worry that he has when she goes to school. But I mean, as they continue on in their endeavors outside of high school and college and like that sort of trajectory, we kind of see it there. But Marty is in school, seeing what's going on and experiencing kind of that feeling, maybe feeling a little bit, not outcast, but like the difference between them is like he's bartending at these people's party, who he goes to school with. And that divide feels really clear to him. And it's almost like he can't see why Rory doesn't see it. And the Dean saying in "The Party's Over, I Don't Belong Here, Do I?" That is, I honestly have always felt that's more of a Marty feeling of like when he's at, when he can't pay because he's like $18 in his bank account or something like that. And Judy's in Chinese food. He recognizes that he doesn't belong there, even though he is one of them in the sense that he attends Yale. He's there, but he's never going to be where she's being welcomed into.
Totally. Yeah. They have a lot more similarities than I really thought about until we dove in on this episode. But also a lot of differences, of course. Question for you, something that just kind of like passed through my mind as I was like, are there any characters that we're forgetting about that we had at Chilton and then like maybe have a Yale counterpart? Would you say that the Yale counterpart to Brad Langford is Glenn?
No, because Brad Langford is pure.
Oh, pure.
And he went to Broadway, and Glenn is like maybe kind of creepy at some point.
We don't love Glenn, but I just mean in the sense that he like kind of pops in every now and then and provides some comedic relief. Or would you say that it's Doyle? Like, I totally could have seen, like, I know that Paris bullied Brad Langford in high school. I also
Paris totally would have bullied Doyle in high school.
That's what I'm saying.
I can see it. I like that.
If you guys
actually
have any other suggestions as to like counterparts that maybe we missed, let us know.
Let us know, because I'm sure there's more. Or if any of these you're like, that's a stretch, girlies.
Yeah.
You just talked a lot and said a lot of words to not really make a point that I connected with.
Yeah.
I think, which I love.
But yeah, of course. But I think we did. This was a lot of fun.
I know. And I like looking at this through the lens of like the Chilton era versus the Yale era, because that's really how you can divide this and like see how much there is like comparisons and contrasts in the people that exist there, the intentions, the setup, because I just feel like the way that the Chilton era affects the Yale era affects us too, is in the way that like we go after school, especially with me, is like I talked about in the girlies first day at school, is that what that 2022 episode was, like Rory really instilled in me, and I don't know what school would have been like for me had I not found Rory Gilmore. I might have gone down a different path, because I think that like the chicken or the egg, which came first? Do I read because of Rory Gilmore, or did I connect with Rory Gilmore because I read? Who is to say? We'll never know.
Who's to say? Yeah. I feel like it shapes a lot of people's, like Rory Gilmore is like study inspo for a lot of people, especially people in school. I think Paris is also representative of like the school girly.
Yeah. I would turn it on to study to, because I would feel inspired by their
work ethic. But there are some people who didn't find the show, until after they had passed that era in their life. And one of those people we actually got to talk to a couple months ago, and we're finally releasing the episode next week, and that is Stassi Schroeder. She's the author of You Can't Have It All. Yes. And we got to talk to her about her book, about her relationship with Gilmore Girls, about how that's kind of shaped the relationship she has with her kids. We have so many exciting things to talk about with her.
And we'll have more to say on that in the next episode.
This sale season, Ritual is urging you to think about what's essential. Your daily health? Pretty essential. Making sure your products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through a traceable supply chain? Also essential. So this Black Friday, skip the micro trends and put your savings where they matter. Your health. With 40% off daily essentials like Stress Relief and Symbiotic Plus for gut support. Head to ritual.com/podcast and shop responsibly.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.